Okay, today is Wednesday, February 4th. Today is Tu B'Shvat. This is the women's Chumash here. We're up to Bereshit, in the middle of Parshat Noach, Perek Ches. Okay, Rabotai. We are coming to the end of Perek Zion of Sefer Bereshit. And I want to focus on a couple of issues as the Torah describes the consequences of the Mabul. So the Torah wrote, I'm just reviewing briefly, looking at Pasuk Yud Zayin for just a second. The Mabul was 40 days. It picked up the Teva. This is a Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayigburu hamayim vayibru mo'od al ha'aretz v'telech ha'teva p'nei hamayim. The teva was floating on the water. V'hamayim gavru mo'od mo'od al ha'aretz v'yichasu kol he'horim ha'gvohim asher tachas kol ha'shamayim. The flood covered all of the high mountains, so that even if there was a person who was relatively tall, even some of the giants, they were overpowered by the waters. Chamesh esrei amal milmala gavru hamayim vayechasu harim. 15 amot above the highest mountain in the world. And amah is about 2 feet, so about 30 feet above any of the highest mountains. And here is where we begin to focus on the next two, three psukim. Vayigva kol basar haromes al haaretz. Any living creature that creeps on the ground was vayigva, was extinguished. Ba'ov uva'behema u'bachaya u'bechol hasheretz hasheretz haaretz v'chol ha'adam. So it starts with creeps, birds, animals, chaya, goes back to creeps again for some strange reason, and v'chol ha'adam. And then Chaf Bet, Kol Asher Nishmat Ruach Chaim Be'apav. Anything that has living breath in its nostrils, Mikol Asher Becharava Mesu. From anything that was on the dry land, died. Vayimach et Kol Hayikum Asher Al Pnei Ha'Adama. And it wiped out any living creature from this earth, me Adam v'ad behima, ad remes v'adaf ha'shamayim, v'ayimachum in aretz. Once again, Adam, behima, remes, of ha'shamayim, wiped out from this earth. V'ayisho'aru, ach Noach v'asher eito b'teva. Only Noach and those that were with him in the teva survived. So there seems to be a lot of repetition, as we've sensed this before, but I want to focus on a couple of things, two, three comments in the Chumash itself, and then a significant statement from a tshuva of Rab Unterman, which has enormous important halakhic significance, and he derived his opinion from the pasuk which we just read this moment. So if you take a look, for example, take a look at the Chizkuni's comment in Pasuk Chof Aleph. He raises a very, very significant issue. The Pasuk stated that everything was destroyed. Animal, bird, creeps, and v'chol ha'adam. So take a look at Chizkuni's comment. I bracketed on the right-hand side of the page. It says, Tevat Adam, the word Adam, generally speaking, in the Chumash, Satam Bechol HaMikra, any time when the word Adam appears throughout the Chumash, Kolelet Anashim V'Nashim V'Taf. It includes everything, man, woman, and child. And the Torah often uses that phrase to distinguish situations where a halacha is only applicable to an adult, not to a child. A halacha is only applicable to a man and not to a woman. So often the Torah describes a mitzvah with ish. Ish, and so on and so forth. And the Gemara will say ish velo katan. This doesn't apply to a minor. Ish, sometimes velo isha, doesn't apply to a woman. They're not going to go through the technical cases. When the Torah writes the word Adam, it includes everybody. And I'll give you an illustration. In Bamidbar chapter 19. Okay? Please open up to Bamidbar chapter 19 for a second. It should be Pasuk Yudches, something around there. It starts Adam ki amud ba'olam. Adam ki amud ba'olam. Anybody have the pasuk in Perek Yud-Heh of Sefer Bamidbar? You should recognize this pasuk. It's Parshas Chukas and Parshat Parah. Yudalud. Pasuk Yudalud. Adam ki amud ba'ohel. This particular section of the Chumash is describing tumat meit. What happens when a person comes exposed to a deceased individual? So tumah is found throughout the Chumash. An animal that dies is tameh, tumat nevela. If you touch it, you have to immerse your tameh. Now let it enter the mikdash. And in order to become tahor, you have to immerse yourself in the mikveh and wait till sundown. And that's true by most forms of tumah. However, tumat meit, when you come in contact with the deceased, you have to be sprinkled with the ashes of the red heifer, the parah adumah, on the third and the seventh day. So the Torah gives you the rules. Adam ki yamut ba'ohel. It's not ish. Because if you're in a tent in a room with the deceased as a child, you become tamei meit. If you're in a room with deceased where the deceased is a woman, you become tamei meit. There is no difference whatsoever in that particular section. So in order to communicate that, the Torah switches from its typical expression of ish, which is 99% of the time as it describes mitzvot, to Adam. Because Adam will include every single person, every single human. So Chizkuni claims that when the Torah writes V'chol Ha'adam, it means the same thing: men, women, and children. Asks Chizkuni, V'im Tomar. We're back at the Chizkuni. If that is the case, Eich ne'enshu dor ha'mabul me'achar shelo nitztavu mitzvot. How is it possible to have punished the generation of the Midbar? After all, they have not been commanded. What a bizarre question. Why is this a bizarre... What's the Rishon talking? Why is this a bizarre question?
Well, first of all, if I already say
about like Hamas, okay, so where have they... That's a description of their characteristic behavior. Where does it say that God told them, do not steal? Where does it say that? Does it say it any place? No. So every Tom, Dick, and Harry, and Sam, everybody here knows that what? This is part of what? Sheva mitzvot and Noah. The question is, when was Noah informed of his responsibility as Sheva mitzvot and Noah? Was it before or after the Mabul? Chizkuni is operating on the premise that Noah is informed of all of the Sheva Mitzvot after the Mabul. In which case he asks the question, how is it possible to exact punishment when there have been no commandments prohibiting the activities which seem to have angered God?
We have the same question with Cain.
What?
We have the same question.
That's going to be his question. His answer is going to be proven by Cain. Just one second. Excellent point. Why do we hold Cain responsible for murder if there can't be Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach? Because there are no B'nai Noach by the time Cain was born. You know, did God give Sheva Mitzvot to Adam HaRishon? I don't know. Unlikely. So that's one of his answers is going to be. Even if you are to ignore that, what part of his original first comment would be subject to the question which he asked? Based on his opening comment of what is included in Adam, what question would you ask aside from the fact, where was the commandment? Based on his opening comment, he opened with a comment that the word Adam includes three categories. What were the three categories? So what question are you about to ask, or should you ask?
Why the children?
Why are children eliminated? Even if you assume that there were commandments to the men and to the women, children are never held accountable. Oh, child is not a bar ocean. We know that. They're not obligated to observe mitzvot. So you mean to tell me a Jewish child is not obligated until they bar bat mitzvah, but a Gentile child is obligated when they're born? Where do we find such a thing? That question he doesn't ask. He asks even on the men and women. It will certainly include the children on a double level. And there have to be something to say. Let's take a look at what he says. And that's his question. Eich ne'enshu dora mabul me'ach sholun istavu mitzvot. Listen to Chizkuni's answer. It is so powerful. Elo yesh lomar, yesh kama mitzvot shechayavim b'nei adam l'shamran mikoach svarat hadat. Wow! There are mitzvot that you are obligated to observe simply intuitively as a human being. Afal pi shelo nitztavu alehem. Despite the fact that what? That they have not been so commanded. Ulefikach ne'enshu. And then Chizkuni says, I am the Chama Becker. That's what he says. I am the Chama Becker. Kimo Kayin, just as Kayin, Shine'enash al Shfichut Damim, who was punished for having murdered his brother Hevel, Afal pi shelo nitztavu akach. Despite the fact that we have no indication whatsoever that Cain was pre-warned that you are not permitted to engage in murder. But there are things intuitively that you should be able to understand. So says Chizkuni. Now this is a very dangerous thing to say, because if you want to apply that at that time, you can also apply it today as well to other situations which the Torah may not have specifically legislated. But a person should realize it's inappropriate in any event. So would you like to make a suggestion today, 5775, of an activity which the Torah does not prohibit, but you and I, based on logic, would say we're compelled to observe this? What would you give me as an illustration? An illustration. And I would refer you to two comments of the Rambam. Two comments of the Rambam. One is his most famous comment in Vayikra chapter 19, verse 2. Take a look, Vayikra 19. Labriut. Vayikra 19, verse 2. One of the most famous Rambams of the Chumash. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Daber Bnei Kol Adam Bnei Yisrael, Vamarta Alehem, Kidoshim Tihiyu. What in the world does it mean when God tells us as an imperative to be holy? So Rashi says, that's what you're quoting. You're quoting Rashi. Hevel prushim min ha'arayot o min ha'aveira. Rashi claims that kidoshim tihiyu is a reference to chapter 18 of Sefer Vayikra, which we read on Yom Kippur to Mincha, where there are certain relationships that ought to be avoided. Incestuous relationships and so on and so forth. So kidoshim to you comes on the foot, on the tail of chapter 18. So God is saying, be very careful. How do you sanctify yourself? By staying away from arayot. That's what Suri is suggesting. That's what Rashi says. But that's not what the Ramban says. The Ramban has this famous thing. Naval bereshut haTorah. What is a naval? A despicable character. Bereshut haTorah. So I am going to give you the perfect illustration. Somebody gets drunk. Okay? Any reason to get drunk? None whatsoever in Torah law. But he engages in inappropriate behavior as a result of the fact that he's drunk. And you want to hold him accountable. And he says, where in the Torah does it say I'm not allowed to get drunk? Says the Ramban, it says Kedoshim Tehiyu. You got to be holy. And you can't claim that you can be a despicable character within the license of the Torah. Because the Torah didn't prohibit drinking schnapps or too many beers. I can say, no. The act itself is despicable, abominable, and one should never engage in such an activity, despite the fact that it's not prohibited. There is a second statement attributed to the Ramban. In Dvarim, I forgot the exact chapter, I can look it up in a second, but the phrase reads, Ve'asisa hayashar ve'hatov be'enei Hashem Elokecha. Ve'asita hayashar ve'hatov. Rabotai, please translate that phrase. Translate. Do what is good and right in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now your 8-year-old is going to ask you, Mommy, what exactly is considered right and good in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So what will you be tempted to answer him or her? What are you going to answer to tempt? It means whatever it says in the Torah. Whatever it says in the Torah, God says that what it does, what it tells you not to do, that's not the Ramban says. Says the Ramban, listen to the holy words of the Ramban. I should have photostated for you. God could not have anticipated every situation that will unfold in the generations to come. There are actions and activities which perhaps 3,300 years ago were okay. Were okay. But things evolved. And I can't anticipate every single detail. So how do you cover yourself that you're supposed to act like a mensch, even though that specific situation is not listed here? The asisa hayasher v'hakoy. In light of that, it's not difficult to understand Chizkuni's remarks that there are certain activities, averot, that logically you have to understand are inappropriate. It is inappropriate, says Chizkuni, for Kayin to have taken somebody's life, even though there is no formal prohibition of lo tirtzach. I have to understand to respect your property, despite the fact that there is no violation, no commandment of lo tignov. So these mitzvot shehaseichel omrim ha, which Sadigon calls mitzvot sichliot, simply logical mitzvot, for which are absolutely compelling to enable society to survive, have to be observed irrespective as to whether or not there's a commandment to do so or not. Hence, none of these people, in his first opinion, will be held accountable because you have to anticipate that it's wrong, and therefore God will punish you. Therefore, there's a mabul, even though you were not formally warned. That's one. But what does that yet not explain? Okay, that's what he says. Doesn't explain what? Why what? No. Doesn't explain children. We can't expect a child to have a moral compass as yet when he's 5 years old or 6 years old that what? That I'm not supposed to rob or, you know, how's he supposed to know? You know, how are you supposed to know that? Child.
Okay,
so there are no models. So therefore, all the more reason not to hold them accountable. Are there any situations where you know the Torah has dictated that a child is to be eliminated even though they are technically not held accountable? What? Good, the Ben Tzoru Mora, that's on the individual child. Aside from that, good. Anybody else? Anything else? Amalek, yes. Somebody once asked Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, what is the most difficult in the mitzvah in the Torah for you to observe? What would be the most difficult mitzvah? And he writes, and he said, Mechiyat Amalek. I could not bring myself to what? To kill an innocent child simply because he's a member of the Amaleki clan. I couldn't. I would be challenged more than any other mitzvah in the Torah to do something like that. Why would a child be held accountable and have to put him to death based on the fact that he happens to be an Amaleki? But there are certain times. Does anybody know the halach of Ir HaNidachat? Ir HaNidachat in Parshat Re'eh, Devarim chapter 14, where you have a city. The majority of the residents of that city worship Avodah Zarah. What is the halacha? You have to burn the whole city down. Every resident in the city is to be killed. Every resident. Man, woman, and child. It's hard to understand it. What? We don't have evidence that it hasn't happened. Ben Sora and Mora, there are, most say never happened. Even though Rabbi Yossi says, I was at the grave of a Ben Sora Mora child. Rabbi Yossi said that I saw it, but okay. But whatever it is, so there are certain times when we hold children accountable under those circumstances as well. But the most famous answer to that objection is something that we mentioned last week, that once the mashchit has been given license to engage in his activity, what happens to the mashchit? He has no bearings, has no way of what? Of acting what?
No boundaries.
No boundaries. The mashchit doesn't know any boundaries. We mentioned that I showed it to you in the Chumash last week in Shemot chapter 13. You weren't here. Shemot chapter 13. That's what you were telling us. I wasn't here. What happened? Either was she, so it doesn't make any difference. But that where God said, if you don't put the blood on the lintels, on the doorposts, the mashchit might come and kill the firstborn of Bnei Yisrael. What do you mean the mashchit? Who is this mashchit? It's God. I told you I can't explain it then. I didn't become a genius in a week. I can't explain it now either. But there is such a mashchit when God allows one of his agents, an angel, to run rampant and to kill, and that guy has no sensitivity whether, so he kills children too. When there is a mashchit on the loose, he kills children as well. And that's what's happening during this Mabul. But Chizkuni raises the question. Then in an about face, his last four words, what does he say? His last four words. Maybe they weren't commanded. God legislated and told them that one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach is that you're not allowed to steal. And what is the single death? What is this? I gave it away. What is the single punishment for violation of any of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach? All death. There is no distinction. A Gentile who does not observe one of seven, it's the same penalty. Well, once they are engaged in Vatimale Ha'aretz Hamas, that's why they're guilty. So he does an about face. He's obviously not 100% sure when the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach were actually legislated. Or the reason which leads us to tell us that it was after the Mabul is because after the Mabul, Noach is given license to eat meat. And at that time, what does God tell him? You can eat meat only after what? After the animal's dead. But you can't eat Eiver Min HaChai. Now that's one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. Now that's recorded in chapter 9, as we will learn, of Sefer Bereshit. So it stands to logic that if Eiver Min HaChai is given then, perhaps that's when he coated the entire body called Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. That leads many to that particular conclusion. But that's point number one. This Chizkuni, very important thing. Point number two. Then he goes back to the creeps.
So I'm wondering,
I don't know.
Is this part of
Riyat HaOlam?
Does it have it started? In other words, Adam is the last person.
Yeah, but he mentions Romei Salaret. No, it's not the order. No, Romesh al-Aretz goes first, but it Bahe Be'me'ah was before Romesh al-Aretz. So then why again does he mention Romesh al-Aretz? I looked around, I couldn't find anything intelligent to say about that. Then point number two. Take a look at Radak on the left hand side of the page. And Radak claims that the Torah enumerates all of those that have been extinguished. Romeis, Of, Babema, Chaya, and so on and so forth. And leaves Adam last. Adam last. Why? Okay. So you could have said, that's, I don't know. Why did he leave it last? Why would you tell me he should decide to record Adam first? Why shouldn't it say that Adam died and then Chaya and Of? And why would that bother the Radak? He's going to say something. If he's going to say, I always tell you, if somebody says something, he's got a problem. Why should it be the reverse?
It's Adam is stable.
So that's going to be his answer. But what's his question? Why should I listen to Adam first? Because whose fault is the flood? It's not the Chaya's fault. It's not the Behemah's fault. Even though many, we saw Rashi, that the animals also hishchit et darkam. Animals also decided to live with one another, not their natural mates. Maybe that's it. But take a look at the Radak's point in the left bottom left hand. Vayik kolodam. Amar v'chol adam ba'achrona. Kilomar. Afilu ha'adam sheyesh lo tach da'at v'tach bula lihishamer mehara. Even man who can use his brains to do what? Escape from danger. Escape from danger. V'haya lahem lihisagev al heharim hagvohim. And what could man conspire to do? Ah, I'm going to go to the top of the mountain, and that flood ain't going to get me. Lo ho'ila lahem tachpulatam. Their little scheming, they did go on the top of the mountain. When they saw the waters rising, everybody tells you, go to high ground. That's what the newscast would tell you. If you live by the beach, get yourself to high ground. They figured that out. Ki chamesh esrei ama mi'alarim gavru alamayim. Because what? The waters exceeded by 15 amot, even the tallest mountain. So all of their scheming didn't accomplish anything. Didn't accomplish anything. There is another reason, and that's what you were saying. What will you say, Mrs. Foreman? You didn't have that mind. You had something else in mind. I know that. What were you saying when you said that man has intelligence? And so what? And so what? Good, exactly. Man had the capacity to what? To discriminate. And to see what is about what's about to unfold. Don't forget, as soon as the flood takes place, which on the list will be eliminated first? Which of the four categories will be eliminated first as soon as the flood starts? What? Which of the four? The creeps, Romeis al Haaretz. So what should intelligent man understand as soon as all of the Romeis al Haaretz begin to become eliminated? What happened? You know, this Noach, what he had been telling us for the last 120 years, you know, maybe there's a kernel of truth in it. And then he witnesses what? All the birds and the animals also eliminate. So what could he have done as the waters begin to rise? What could he have done? What? Exactly. I can at least tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm sorry. It would be called, at that time, Tshuva Meira. Tshuva Meira is, or what the Rambam calls, Tshuva She'ena Gemura, is where you're facing life and death situation, and you know, It's what a person does. I'm serious, I'm not trying to. If a person says vidui on their deathbed, you can be the biggest scoundrel on the world, but we tell you to say vidui on your deathbed. Now that doesn't really mean that it's tshuva shleima, tshuva gemura. Why? Because you don't have the capacity to prove that you mean it sincerely. The only time that's considered tshuva gemura is if you're faced with a similar situation, and what do? And you avoid, you mend your ways. But it's always better to die a shav than to die in a no shav. Therefore, we have this practice that, you know, no matter what the status of a person was, we will encourage them to engage in some form of vidui, even on their deathbed. So here too, when the rest of these creatures are becoming eliminated and they see the waters rising, chol ha'adam, they had an opportunity to do something, to say, oh, Rabbi Nishan, give me one more chance, I'll prove myself. And they didn't. So it saved them for last. That's why it's last in the text, because it's not just they had a chance to escape. They were given an opportunity to witness what was going on and hopefully mend their way simply by witnessing firsthand, and they refused to do so. They did not do so. That's he adds. But he adds something else. Often the Torah tells us, particularly by tzaddikim, that not just that they died, but vayigva. Vayigva. We will learn this by the death of Abraham, by the death of Yitzchak, by the death of Vayigva, vayasef alamav. Now, it means to die. What is the standard way of dying? While expressing that, vayamas. What does vayigva mean? So Radak adds at the end, what does he claim? Why does he say vayigva? What does it say? That you die quickly below shum arichut. It's a quick death. And he claims, as he does at the end, v'chein hu hatoveya b'mayim. When you drown, it's a rather quick death. Is that true? It's not really that true. People say when you drown, you suffer quite a bit. It's not like where it says vayigva by Avraham, so Rashi says it was mitat nishika. What is mitat nishika? HaKadosh Baruch Hu kissed you, you're dead. That's it, nothing. You died in your sleep. That was it. You didn't notice anything. Didn't sense it. That's something which is... So his conclusion about dying, drowning, it happens to be a quick death. There's no, you drown, it's pretty quick. It doesn't, you know, it goes pretty quickly. But, you know, you can quibble with it, but at least he's giving us some thought of what he claims it means, vayigva, that it happens to be a quick death rather than a prolonged, extended death of suffering. That's his point. If you turn over the page for a moment, this is a halachic statement that has enormous, and he proves it from the pasuk that we just read. The author of this tshuva was the Rav HaRashi during the Six-Day War. His name is Rav Iser Yehuda Unterman. Rav Unterman was the Rav HaRashi, was a prolific posek. Not a terribly great, tremendous Talmud Chacham, but personality-wise, very humble, very quiet. So he didn't have the known renown of a Rav Gorin, Rabbi Lau. You know, when he came to America, Rabbi Lau, you knew that he was an impressive person. Rav Gorin, certainly due to his fact that he was a paratrooper in the army. Rav Unterman was a lot under the radar, and so was his Sephardic contemporary Rav Nissim as well. But he wrote many tshuvot. And his question discusses today, one of his tshuvas is the basis of allowing organ transplants, particularly a heart transplant. What is the argument of those who argue that heart transplantation is biblically prohibited? What's the definition? So what's the argument? Why do they say that it's biblically prohibited? It is misa. You're a murderer if you engage in heart transplant. Why?
Because
what? Because in order to have a successful heart transplant, the heart has to be working. Once the heart stops, that's it. Can't successfully transplant. So if you believe that the definition of death hinges upon cessation of the heartbeat, it's impossible to engage in heart transplants. Forget about this is pre-definition of death, of brain death. That's what one of the things that brain death accomplished. Other organs will still be what? Right. And brain death is going to be hinging on his psak halacha. He said, no, what does our pasuk say in determining what is considered a... Look at the pasuk itself. Tell me why pasuk chaf bet will disagree with that, those who claim it is heartbeat. Why will it disagree? Why will it disagree? Kol asher nishmat ruachayim be'apav, in the nose, in your nostrils. So what is the determining factor of nishmat chayim?
Breathing,
respiration. So there are times when respiration has stopped and the heart will still be pumping for a while. That happens all the time. As a result, based on his tshuva, this definition, he allowed heart transplants as long as the person has stopped breathing. And truth be told, that is the entire basis of brain death. Anybody who's heard Rabbi Tendler's pitch, and it's compelling from a medical point of view, I'm not a doctor, but it's compelling from a layman's point of view, that there has never been in the history of mankind a person who has been fully brain dead who has the capacity to engage in breathing. Impossible. Never once that a person has been brain dead has the capacity to engage in independent breathing. Never once. So if you should assume that breathing is what? Is the definition of death, then brain death, which is the trigger that there cannot be any what? Any independent respiration, that automatically leads you to the conclusion that what? That brain death is the definition of death. And I'll show it to you inside. It's a rather lengthy tshuva. I just want to show you where he quotes our pasuk. Be'ikar hanidon, im mitat halev koveya mitat ha'adam. If what? If death is determined by the death of the heart, o mitat hamoach, or is the death of the brain, im hafsakat pe'imat halev, or hafsakan hanishima, is it the stopping of the beating of the heart, or what? Or respiration. Afal pi shepashtu shitas hashas yuma peher meralef ad hechan hu bodek ad chotmo. That if you come to a, here is the case, a building collapses on Shabbos. Okay, are you allowed to engage in a rescue operation? What would you say? Of course. So you're allowed to clear the debris. Now you come to the victims. Well, what are you allowed to do? If they're alive, what are you allowed to do?
Yes.
Keep moving. If they're dead, what are you allowed to do? Nothing. So the Gemara asks, how far do you have to check the body in front of you after you've cleared the debris to determine if he's alive or not? So one says, ad heichan hu bodek, ad chotmo. Must check his nose to see if there's any breathing coming from his nose. V'yesh omlim ad libo. Others say you have to check to see if his heart is beating. The Masik Hashas, the Gemara concludes, the Le'inyan Pikuach Nefesh Gam Abashau Modeh the Ikar Chiyusei Be'apeh. That when it comes to determining whether we should what? Be Michal Shabbos or not for Pikuach Nefesh, everybody says that what's the definition? Breathing. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk writes, Kol Asher nishmat ruach be'apav. Now that's a very strange, that's strange. It's a bold statement to come to a halachic reading based on this text here, where the Torah is not talking about halachic categories. The Torah is giving you like a poetic description. Oh, everything with living breath was killed during the Mabul. Yet he uses it in a purely halachic sense, convincing him that breathing is the determining factor. And since Moach determines the breathing factor, we are going to allow brain death, and that opens up a Pandora box for all types of transplants, which I tell you, you should fill out your card to be an organ donor. I have one right here, my Orthodox halachic Orthodox donor card. You should all get one. Yeah, I have it right here someplace. You should all get one. You should all get one, of course.
I have one right here.
You have one?
Yeah.
Excellent. I got one here someplace too. I'll find it here somewhere. Yeah, I got it here someplace. One of these cards has it. There you go. Halachic Organ Donor Society. Picture was a little different at the time, but so why? Because if you're declared brain dead, you can be mekayem mitzvah of sustaining 5 lives through organ transplant. So when your time comes, hopefully not in the very near future, you'll have that opportunity. But he quotes this pasuk to indicate that his decision is based on that. And that's why it's a critical halachic decision, which many quote as serving as a basis for us. That's point number 3. Point number 2, or number 4, is Ibn Ezra's comment. Turn the page back, the middle of the page on the left-hand side. V'yitachein lihiyot in pasuk chapet kol ashenu nishmat ruach be'apav shav el ha'adam. So Ibn Ezra asks the question. The Torah is making a list. The list ends Mikol asher becharava mesu. Mikol asher becharava. How many items have been listed are included in the word Mikol? How many items, Rabotai, are included in the word Mikol? All of the above. What are the above? Remes, Ov, Behema, Chaya, Adam, and Kol asher nishmat ruach ba'apav. So asks Ibn Ezra, what in the world does Kol asher nishmat ruach ba'apav mean? What category does it include above and beyond what? Remes, Chaya, Ov, Behema, and Adam. What else does it include?
Plants.
But plant doesn't have nishmat ruach chayim bo. What?
Fish.
Okay, perhaps fish. We'll see. There'll be a discussion about that. So what does Ibn Ezra say? V'yitachein, he suggests, lihiyot kol asher nishmat ruach chayim ba'apav shav el ha'adam. Obviously, this additional phrase at the beginning of Pasuk Chabet, kol asher nishmat, is not a new category, but what is it? It is a repetition of that which appears at the end of Chaf Aleph. What phrase appears at the end of Chaf Aleph? What phrase appears at the end of Chaf Aleph?
Kol Adam.
So this Kol Asher Nishmat is a repetition of the Kol Adam. Why do I suggest that? Ki lo matzanu nishma nishama chutz me nishmat ha'adam. I have never found the concept of a nishama applied to what? To any creature other than what? Other than man. The rabbim amru shenikrat kein ba'avur shehi min hashamayim. He claims that the word nishama comes from where? Something related to what? Shamayim. In other words, it's the spiritual dimension of the Tzelem Elohim. Exactly. So Tzelem Elohim is not to be found in any other living creature, despite the fact that they breathe. So your donkey breathes through its nose. So does your dog. but it doesn't have Tzelem Elohim. It doesn't have a neshama. Hence, this is a repetition of what? Of Kol HaAdam. So what's his point? So why does the Torah list it twice? It's to tell you. First of all, what type of man was destroyed? What type of man was destroyed? The Adam, the Adam that is very comparable to a Chaya, who has a physical life, a biological life, same biological needs, biological drives. But on top of that, another dimension of man was also eliminated. What type of mention of man? What type of dimension of man was eliminated? The dimension of man that has Tzelem Elohim bo. And that it is that dimension which gives man the capacity to what? To discriminate between right and wrong. And this particular man failed to do so, and hence he gets double mention. Number one, Kol HaAdam was destroyed. That's the Adam that's compared to a Chaya. Chaya. I once had a Rosh Yeshiva who used to say, who was asked, Vavos daf min shogin tfilas haderechait. Why do you have to say tfilas haderech? There are no chayot ra'ot running around. And he said, please don't think that he was a bigot. I'm just quoting him. Okay, I won't say it. I'll just amend it. Do you really believe that a drunk driver is not a wild animal? He's also a wild animal. So you have to say Tfilat HaDerech because those are Chayot Ra'ot. Those are Chayot. People who are living just in the physical world and don't understand what their responsibilities are. So that's B'chol Adam. On top of that is also Nishmat Ruach Be'apav. So it has nothing to do with the halachic definition of where you're breathing that defines life. It's a spiritual dimension of what? Of the Tzelem Elohim, and those people also were destroyed, and hence it was so painful. We mentioned, why is this repeated 800 times? And it's going to be repeated again next three psukim. Why again? Because it hurts HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he is compelled to destroy man which has a Tzelem Elohim of him in it. So when he kills these people, he's, you know, killing his own image. And that's extremely painful. And therefore, he belabors the point 68,000 times. 68,000 times. Yeah. Yeah. Finally, at the end of Pasuk Chaf Gimel, the Torah tells us, the last phrase, tell me what word is totally superfluous. Totally superfluous. Ach, of course. It could have said, Vayishore Noach, V'chol asheri toba teva. What does the ach mean? Ach. Even. That's only. So what does it add? If it said, Vayisha Noach Vashari Toba Teva, I would know. The only ones been saved are what? Noach and those in the Teva. It's pretty explicit. So take a look at Rashi in Pasuk Chav Gimel on the caption Ach Noach. Levad Noach Zepshuto. So Rashi's don't get hysterical. It means, okay, Ach Noach. Okay. Don't get hysterical. But Rashi knows that Chazal throughout the Torah reacted to the word ach. Take a look at Vayikra chapter 23. Verse must be Chaf Gimel or something like that, Chaf Dalet, something like that, or Chaf Hei, Chaf Zayin. Vayikra chapter 23. I told you have to know this parsha by heart. It's the parsha of the Maadot. You have to know this by heart. What pasuk is it? Ach be'asor lachodesh ha'shvi'i. Ach be'asor lachodesh. What are we talking about? Yom Kippur. What do you mean? Ach be'asor. Every other Yom Tov is introduced by the day. Bachamisha asar yom lachod is sukkos. It should have said, What do you mean, ach? Chazal always darshan the word ach and came to the conclusion that kol achin shebatora eino el lima'et. Kol achin shebatora einan lima'et. Come to exclude you from a certain category. That's what it does. The function of the word ach is to exclude you from a category. Take a look at Rashi's comment. Umed Rasho. Haya goneach v'chohe dam mitorach habehemot v'hachayot. In other words, Noach didn't get out a full human being. He was bleeding. He was exhausted. So he was partially dead as well. He didn't get out complete Noach. He's only a partial Noach. Part of him did not get did not escape being scathed by the Mabul. Not by the waters, but by the tircha that he had to go and worry about 600,000 animals. Hey, what do you want for lunch? What do you want for breakfast? I don't like the peanut butter. I don't like this. You know, those things. And then he quotes another. V'yesh omrim, another medrash, she'icher mizonot la'ari. One day he was late with the food for the lion. V'hekisho, and the lion bit him. Hit him. Oh, that's why he came out wounded. That's what it means, Vayishoer Ach Noach. Nishtin Gansen. He's not the complete Noach when he escapes the Teva. Cute little Midrash, Yula Midrash. There might be something a little better to understand, and we'll continue with this next Avach to try to explore what message, even if through the Midrash, does it really want to let us know about the Ach Noach, that he did not escape being scathed in the Mabul, what the Midrash is really trying to teach us from a more philosophical point of view. We'll stop here and continue next Avach.